Welcome, as always. It's wonderful to be sitting here together with you. Today, I'll start with a Sufi tale. The master of a large household needed to go abroad for a long period. He decided to leave his trusted butler in charge of his affairs. When his master returned after many years, he discovered that the butler no longer recognized him. The butler believed that he himself was the master of the house. In fact, long before, when he first took over, the butler said, "I'm in charge now. I have power over people, but the people can't know who I really am. So I have to hide my true identity from them." And the butler hid so well that he forgot how he got the job in the first place. He identified with his new role, and his power was aimed at maintaining his position and proving that he was worthy of love and respect. In fact, the butler became so immersed in his role that he was unwilling to give up control of the household when the master returned. So, the master needed to send in his henchmen. They appeared to the butler as obstacles to maintaining his power. Depression, anxiety, envy, competition, projections onto others. As a result, the butler felt afraid that he would be found to be a fraud. Eventually, having faced the henchman and his own pain and struggle, the butler was humbled and forced to surrender to the master's authentic power, and the master returned to his place as head of the home. This is a story that's told by Idris Shah in Tales of the Dervishes, and it's paraphrased and embellished by Jungian analyst and meditation teacher Connie Zwei in her book on The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul. Connie Zwei adapts the story to explain the depression, anxiety, and loss that many people may feel upon retirement or when they're no longer able to perform the role they valued for so long. I look forward to hearing your responses to this story in our discussion, and I'll return to it later. However, at this moment in our Torah cycle, I was reminded of this story, this Sufi tale, when I reviewed this week's Parsha Miketz. For Joseph is, of course, the servant of Pharaoh, the servant who rises to power and tries to forget his past. For Joseph, it is not enough to be released from prison and brought into the palace to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, because he knows, as one who has been elevated and then thrown into the pit twice before, first by his brothers and then by Potiphar's accusations, he seizes this moment to ensure a more permanent elevation. Beyond interpreting the dream, Joseph advises Pharaoh on what to do. He says, "Accordingly, let Pharaoh find someone who's discerning and wise, whom you can set over the land of Egypt, and let Pharaoh take steps to appoint overseers over the land and organize the land of Egypt in 7 years of plenty. Let all the food of these good years that are coming be gathered, and let the grain be collected under Pharaoh's authority as food to be stored in the cities, and let the food be a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will come upon the land of Egypt, so the land may not perish in the famine." And Pharaoh said to his courtiers, "Could we find another like him, a man with the divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, Since God has made all of this known to you, there is none so discerning and wise as you. The plan appealed to Pharaoh. He liked the idea of controlling all the resources himself. And, as in the Sufi tale, the servant, Joseph, fearful of his true identity being discovered, Joseph assumes the role of master and identifies with Pharaoh in his grasping for control. The part of the Sufi tale that resonates most with the Joseph story is the mysterious forgetting. The insecure butler hides his sense of himself not only from others, but eventually from himself. Of course, there is a psychological price to pay for assuming and believing in a false identity. We become disconnected from our past, and this is so for Joseph, who takes a new name, wears new clothes, marries an Egyptian wife, and has two children. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, meaning, God has made me completely forget my hardship and my parental home. Joseph is not the first of his lineage to leave home. We're introduced to Abraham, or Avram, as God instructs him to leave the land of his birth and the houses of his father in Lech Lecha, a command to distance himself from his ancestral home in a journey of discovery and transformation. Jacob also flees home to escape his brother's wrath, but Joseph's leaving is marked by a great relief in forgetting the past. As Aviva Zornberg points out in her commentary on the book of Genesis, that's called The Beginning of Desire, Joseph is acknowledging the mercy of oblivion. He is grateful not to be haunted by memory. As those who suffer trauma can attest, intrusive images and obsessive preoccupation with the past can be crippling. He cannot let his memories interfere with his role as first in command under Pharaoh. This is Zornberg's interpretation, and she continues to point out not only the evils of the past, but also its loves, its beauty, and its sweetness all become perilous to one whose business is sheer survival. Joseph cannot afford to miss the sweetness of his home, the love, the special love he experienced from his father. Paradoxically, in choosing a name for Manasseh that is about completely forgetting the past, he's nevertheless keeping in awareness his act of forgetting. The name is a reminder of forgetting. What does this remind us of? It's similar to the paradoxical command that we never forget to blot out the memory of Amalek. Forgetting and remembering are totally intertwined, coexisting. What we try to forget will inevitably come up in some unexpected form. In trying to forget, we may lose touch with the sweetness of memories. We may be limited in our capacity for emotional connection. We may be unable to feel accepted in our wholeness. And the Torah story continues, the second child he named Ephraim, meaning God has made me fertile in my land of affliction. Zornberg points out how the name contains opposites. Just like remembering and forgetting, this name contains fertility and affliction. Joseph, whose name means he will increase or God will increase, is nevertheless preoccupied with affliction, determined to sustain his family all of Mitzrayim and the lands beyond through the years of affliction. So the name of Ephraim evokes the themes of narrowness and expansiveness, which run through the book of Genesis and Exodus. According to the Zohar, the name Mitzrayim is derived from mi, from, and tzar, narrow or tight, like the chant we sang, Min HaMitzar. Joseph has descended into the land of narrowness, constriction. Despite his acquisition of fame and fortune, his actions set off a chain of events that lead to the oppression of the children of Israel, to the loss of connection with the expansiveness of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, even at the same time that he is saving them from starvation. As Shefa Gold describes in her commentary in Torah Journeys, when the soul loses its conscious connection with the infinite, then it is in Mitzrayim, in constriction. Joseph sets up a system in which the people become dependent on Pharaoh. Ultimately, this system that was set up to save Joseph and his family in Egypt, and that saved his family of origin, and their descendants, will lead to the oppression of these descendants. How does that happen? We could look at political reasons, but Shefa Gold explains Joseph is recognized by Pharaoh as the one in whom the Spirit of God lives. Joseph owes his resurrection from the pit to his connection with the expansiveness of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, his ability to interpret dreams. Yet, when Pharaoh recognizes the source of Joseph's greatness, he takes the signet ring from his own hand, puts it on Joseph's hand, dresses him in robes of fine linen, and puts a gold chain around his neck. Joseph is given a new name and an Egyptian wife. Shefa Gold comments the challenge of power and wealth is that you become bound to serve the one who confers it upon you. You become invested in defending the system that keeps your wealth and power intact. If you constantly remember that God is the true source and know that it is really God that you serve, then your wielding of power will express the divine attributes of justice and compassion. However, for Joseph, like for many of us, old hurts keep us in a narrow place, caught up, like Joseph, in a need to put his brothers through some torment, in an understandable drive for revenge. Or we may simply be like the butler in the Sufi tale. For him, the fear of being found out as an impostor leads him to feel disconnected from others, from his own sense of being valued as he is. For Joseph, compassion is restored in that dramatic moment when the sight of his brother Benjamin and the self-sacrificing offer of his brother Judah break through his denial of longing for connection to his early life. Wailing, he embraces his estranged brothers and assures them that he will not seek revenge. Nevertheless, the roots of an oppressive system have been set in motion by Joseph's systemic oppression under the service of Pharaoh. And the children of Israel will not be liberated until Moses is born, escapes Mitzrayim, but then returns to reestablish connection with expansive awareness at Mount Sinai. Now, in the past, we've noted and talked about the similarities between the stories of Buddha and Moses. Both were of the palace, born, well, Moses wasn't born in the palace, but He was in the palace raised. Both began their journeys of transformation when they walked out of the palace bubble and witnessed suffering. The Buddha was struck by aging, illness, and death and set out to understand why we suffer from the inevitability of death, why we suffer from life the way it is. Moses was struck by the harsh oppression of his people, and his impulsive act of revenge forced him to escape. With a later mission of liberation. Both the Buddha and Moses enter into expanded awareness after long, arduous journeys. Moses at the burning bush, Buddha with his awakening. This week, as I reviewed these stories, I realized that both Buddha and Moses return to the narrow place in order to leave others into expansiveness. The Buddha could not have entered nirvana. Oh, no, the Buddha could have taken the option of entering nirvana and getting off the wheel of life, the wheel of inevitable pain and suffering. Moses could have stayed as shepherd. Indeed, he tried to talk God out of giving him the job of liberating his people. However, Moses did follow the command to return to the place of narrowness and to lead the children of Israel into expansive awareness at Mount Sinai. And of course, the Buddha did not enter nirvana right away, but returned for, as the story goes, dedicating the rest of his 45 years on this earth to teaching. When we recall how God instructs Moses to demand that Pharaoh let my people go, it's important always to remember that the full verse of Moses quoting God is, "Let my people go that they may serve me." Liberation from a cruel oppressor is to be replaced by service to expansive awareness. What about Joseph's story speaks to our own sources of power and strength? What masters are we serving? Perhaps the butler in the Sufi tale is a bit more life-sized and easier to identify with than Joseph or Moses. At first, the butler feels like an imposter and needs to hide himself. He has hidden himself so completely from others and from himself that he has lost touch with the moment-to-moment unfolding of reality. He cannot recognize his true master or the true source of his power when his master returns. He has to contend with the master's henchmen, depression, anxiety, envy, competition, projections onto others, and in struggling with them, he realizes that his role is not his only calling in life. His job, his status, and all the efforts he has to make to maintain these cannot be the source of lifelong fulfillment. In the context of Connie Zweig's book on the inner work of age, we recognize these henchmen as the depression and anxiety that often come as we have to give up previous roles and identities. Sometimes as we age, and sometimes independent of aging. Fortunately, there are limitless ways to serve expanded consciousness. Represented by the true master in the Sufi tale and by Yud-Heh Vav-Heh in the Joseph and Moses stories, service to this more expansive awareness is an endless and open mission. It requires no special certifications. It's available to each of us at any moment. So, as always, we study these words of Torah or the Dharma, and The tales often speak to us. However, the explanations and the contradictions are often confusing because language is inherently confusing. However, as we listen and talk and sit with these teachings, and we stay open to awareness in our sitting practice, the stories and teachings give rise to feelings and experiences that ultimately change the way we live.